Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2, Divinity and Divine Service, Text 28 and 29. We're spending 2 days on these two verses. Shesha Prabhu did part of the purport, and I'm going to do the final paragraph, which is quite a long paragraph. Since my paragraph deals mostly with the last line of the two verses, we're going to chant only the second of the two verses. And the word meanings for those, and of course this is all about Vasudev. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. I was thinking as we were chanting that, it's especially appropriate today. Speaking about Vasudev, the personality of Godhead. So the word meanings for the second verse, let's see. Vasudeva, personality of Godhead, Param, the supreme jnanam, knowledge. Vasudeva, the personality of Godhead, Param, best tapaha, austerity. Vasudeva, the personality of Godhead, Para, superior quality. Dharma, religion. Vasudeva, the personality of Godhead, Para, ultimate gati, goal of life. You see how the word putta is translated in different ways throughout the verse. Similar ideas, putta, the highest thing, the idea is putta. So we can chant this. Yes. Vasudeva param jnanam. Vasudeva param tapaha. Vasudeva paro dharmo. Vasudeva paragati. Vasudeva param jnanam. Vasudeva param tapaha. Vasudeva paro dharmo. Vasudeva paragati. Vasudeva param jnanam. Vasudeva param tapaha. Vasudeva paro dharmo. Vasudeva paragati.
Vasudeva paro dharmo.
Vasudeva paragati.
Vasudeva paragati.
Vasudeva param jnanam.
Vasudeva param jnanam.
Vasudeva param tapa.
Vasudeva param tapa.
Vasudeva paro dharmo.
Vasudeva paro dharmo.
Vasudeva paragati.
Vasudeva. Vasudeva param jnanam.
Vasudeva param tapa.
Vasudeva param tapa.
Vasudeva paro dharmo.
Vasudeva paro dharmo.
Vasudeva paragati.
Vasudeva paragati.
Translation. In the revealed scriptures, the ultimate object of knowledge is Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead. The purpose of performing sacrifice is to please him. Yoga is for realizing him. All fruitive activities are ultimately rewarded by Him alone. He is the supreme knowledge, and all severe austerities are performed to know Him. Religion, dharma, is rendering loving service unto Him. He is the supreme goal of life. So continuing the purport. Yes. Vasudeva is the original personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. As explained before, the original personality of Godhead expands Himself by innumerable forms. Such expansion of forms is made possible by His various energies. His energies are also multifarious, and His internal energies are superior and external energies inferior in quality. They are explained in the Bhagavad Gita 7:4-6 as the para and the upara prakritis. So His expansions of various forms which take place via the internal energies are superior forms, whereas the expansions which take place via the external energies are inferior forms. The living entities are also His expansions. The living entities who are expanded by His internal potency are eternally liberated persons, whereas those who are expanded in terms of the material energies are eternally conditioned souls. Therefore, all culture of knowledge, austerities, sacrifice, and activity should be aimed at changing the quality of the influence that is acting upon us. For the present, we are all being controlled by the external energy of the Lord, and just to change the quality of the influence, we must endeavor to cultivate spiritual energy. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that those who are Mahatmas, or those whose minds have been so broadened as to engage in the service of Lord Krishna, are under the influence of the internal potency. And the effect is that such broad-minded living beings are constantly engaged in the service of the Lord without deviation. That should be the aim of life. That is the verdict of all the Vedic literatures. No one should bother himself with fruitive activities or dry speculation about transcendental knowledge. Everyone should at once engage himself in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Nor should one worship different demigods who work as different hands of the Lord for creation, maintenance, or destruction of the material world. There are innumerable powerful demigods who look over the external management of the material world. They are all different assisting hands of Lord Vasudeva. Even Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma are included in the list of demigods, but Lord Vishnu, or Vasudeva, is always transcendentally situated. Even though He accepts the quality of goodness of the material world, He is still transcendental to all the material modes. The following example will clear the matter more explicitly. In the prison house, there are the prisoners and the managers of the prison house. Both the managers and the prisoners are bound by the laws of the king. But even though the king sometimes comes in the prison, he is not bound by the laws of the prison house. The king is therefore always transcendental to the laws of the prison house, as the Lord is always transcendental to the laws of the material world. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Om Jnana Timirantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. The last line of this verse, Vasudeva Paragati, which Prabhupada speaks about, especially at the end of this purport, that Vasudeva is the ultimate goal, gati. This is really the central theme of these two verses, these eight lines. Krishna is the supreme of this and the supreme of that. They're all pointed to the same idea that He's the supreme goal of life. He's the goal. He's the purpose, as Shesha Prabhu was talking about yesterday. He's the purpose of all of these things. Paragati. Yasya prasadad bhagavat prasado yasya prasadan na gati kutopi. We get that gati, of course, that goal, the destination that we want, going back home, back to Godhead, to Krishna's lotus feet. By the prasad of the spiritual master, yasya. There are a lot of asyas in the Guru Vashtakam. This is the genitive or the possessive. Possessive, because the way the Sanskrit is in this Guru Vashtakam, I offer my obeisances to the lotus feet of the spiritual master, of whom or by whom or who possesses this quality and that quality. So we have a lot of these yasya. So yasya means of whom. Yasya prasadat, or of his prasad, or by his prasad, by his mercy. Bhagavat, or by the Guru's mercy, Bhagavat Prasad. You get Bhagavat Prasad. You get Krishna's Prasad. Yasya Prasad. And then Yasya Aprasad. We should actually be careful how we pronounce it. Yasya Prasad and Yasya Prasad. Yasya and Aprasad makes Yasya Prasad. So that means by his not Prasad, literally is what it says, by his non Prasad, by the Guru's non Prasad, non mercy, Nagati Kutopi. Kuta means something like, where is? Where is the goal? You'll never get the goal. You won't attain the goal without the mercy of the Guru. So that goal is Vasudev. Now Srila Prabhupada, throughout his books, this word Vasudev is, in most people's view, unless you're a Krishna Bhakta, it's a generic name for God, just like Hari is another example. Hari simply means God, you can say. And Vasudev is taken as God. Narayana is Vasudev. And the impersonalists, they even take it in an impersonal way. The Brahman is Vasudev. Now, there's actually a definition of Vasudev in the scriptures. I had just happened to come across it around the same time I was looking at this verse. We have a book, I don't know how many of you are familiar with it. It was published in 2007 by the BBT. It's called Sri Krishna Lila Stava. Stava means something like anthology, I think, a collection of verses of Sri Krishna Lila. So it's by Srila Sanatan Goswami. This is the shortest of Sanatan Goswami's works. It's something like 400 some verses. And he summarizes Krishna's pastimes. Actually, it has this subtitle, Adoration of Krishna's Pastimes. So most of the book is just, he just goes through all of Krishna's pastimes as they're enumerated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, or as they're spoken by Shukadeva Goswami. But in the beginning, there are something like 30 verses just of general glorification of the Lord. In text number 5 of this book, in the first chapter, it says, O Supreme Soul, Vasudeva, Lord of Nature and Lord of her Enjoyer. This, by the way, which I won't read, but this means, Lord of Nature means Prakriti, and her Enjoyer means the Purusha, which means us, the Jiva. The Jiva is the enjoyer, or trying to enjoy, material nature. So Vasudeva is the Lord of Nature and Lord of her Enjoyer. Bestower of all the energies of knowledge and activity, I offer you my obeisances again and again. So in the purport, Gopi Puranadan Prabhu is the person who he translated and wrote the commentary on this book. So in his commentary, he quotes a few verses. I'll just read the translations. I think there's, four verses that talk about Vasudev, what the word Vasudev means. The first one is from the Brahma Vaivarta Purana, section called Sri Krishna Janma Kanda. Brahma Vaivarta Purana is also full of Krishna's pastimes. So there it says, the Supreme Lord, Deva, in the Vasudeva word, the Supreme Lord, Deva, the Absolute Truth, within whose hair holds, all the universes have their abode, Vasa, is called Vasudeva. So Vasa means abode, or home, or place, or situation. So he's called Vasudeva, because he's Deva, he's the Lord, and Vasa. All the universes have their abode. He is the abode of all the universes, the hair holes of his body. So that's from Brahma Vaivarta Purana. This is from the Vishnu Purana. He resides everywhere and within everything in this universe, and therefore learned scholars refer to him as Vasudeva. So this is another idea. The first idea is that everything has its abode in him, or he is the abode of everything. So here, he resides everywhere. So his abode is everywhere. That's the idea with this. God is everywhere. So he lives everywhere. His vasa, or his abode, is everywhere. Therefore, he's called Vasudeva. That's what the Vishnu Purana says. Here's another one. This is also from the Vishnu Purana. All created beings live in him, the Supreme Soul, and he lives in every living being as the indwelling soul of all. Therefore, the Smritis call him Vasudeva. So here we have both ideas. He lives in them, and they live in him. So here's, again, the idea of abode. And finally, from the Brahma Purana, the Supreme Lord is the creator and regulator of all the worlds, every vasa, or abode. So all the abodes in the sense of specific abodes, planets. And thus he is called Vasudeva. So that's another reason. He's the creator and regulator of all the abodes or planets within the universe. So none of these say that he's Krishna. But what do we take? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Prabhupada translates it. What does he say? The son of Vasudeva, I think. So Vasudeva also means the son of Vasudeva. So who's Vasudeva? Vasudeva, of course, is Krishna's father. So we like to take it that this is about Krishna specifically. Of course, when we see Vishnu, we should also be seeing Krishna. All these other forms that we worship, they're all Krishna. They're just Krishna appearing in a certain way. Just like a child may see, you know, the father in a certain way at home and then see him going about his business or whatever. Oh, there's my daddy. He's got a uniform on, but it's still my daddy. So I was thinking of this one day. Actually, Pran Govinda, we were singing Vibhavara Ishesha one morning at Greeting the Deities. And this is something I'd thought of too. I've always felt it's interesting. He asked me, he said, it's mixing in the names. You have Ram in there, and you have Hayagriva and Nrsimha. But most of the song, about 90% of it, is about Krishna. Krishna's name, specifically Krishna and Vrindavan. So singing this myself at times, I thought, it seems like this is Rasa Abbas. You're mixing in, you know, you're thinking of Krishna, but then Nrsimhadev at the same time. So I thought about it a little bit. I thought, well, actually, it's because Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he sees Nrsimha, he sees Krishna. When he sees Vamana, he sees Krishna. He said, oh, my Krishna is appearing like this. Or my Krishna is appearing like, you know, in this form or that form. Or Lord Ram is Krishna. It's just Krishna in this form. In fact, even the gopis, they talk about Krishna's avatars. And sometimes this question about is, what does Krishna, do the gopis know that he's God? I've mentioned this before. It seems like, well, they do and they don't. Sometimes they do. It's just all happens. Is that all about the Leela? But they do. They also call him Hari. Again, Haridasavarya. They refer to Govardhan as Haridasavarya, the best of the Haridasas. By the way, I think it's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. he says that throughout the Bhagavatam, there are only three mentions of Haridas. I forget who they are. One of them is Yudhishthir, and I forget who the other one is. And the third one is Govardhan. And Govardhan is called Haridasavarya, the best of the Haridasas. The first time I read this, I thought, how amazing is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur? That he, you know, he doesn't have database to search how many times Haridas shows up in the Bhagavatam. He just knows how many times it shows up. So anyway, the gopis, they refer to Krishna as Hari, and they sometimes mention Krishna's, they're criticizing Krishna, for example, you know, the way he treated Bali Maharaj, or the way he treated Sugriva in the Ram Leela, and so on. So they're sometimes admitting like this. But what are they thinking? They're not thinking this is Ram exactly. They're thinking this is Krishna, and sometimes he goes and puts on a show, puts on a play, and he's an actor in the play. Sometimes he's wrong, sometimes he's Nrsimha, sometimes he's Vamana, but it's always Krishna. So getting back to this, Vasudeva is, in a sense, a general name or generic name for God, but the devotees of Krishna, they see, oh, this is about Krishna. Now, previous to this, there's a series of verses. Of course, this second chapter of the Bhagavatam, it's about devotional service. It's about devotional service to Krishna, obviously. And after the culmination of these verses, specifically about bhakti, devotional service to the Lord, then we get some verses just about Vishnu, to explain why Vishnu should be worshipped, or Krishna. We're saying Krishna. What sets him apart from the others? And it's mentioned there that the other, even Shiva, Vishnu, and Brahma, they're all in contact with the modes of material nature. So when you read that's one of the verses that came up previously. The question may, because it says that for the benefit of the living entities, I think it is something like that, he accepts the modes of material nature. So God accepts the modes of material nature. And then he represents them or oversees them as Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwar. So when you read that, you might think, well, Vishnu is in touch with the mode of goodness, because we're talking about the three gunas here, the three modes of material nature. So how is Vishnu? Because we tend to think, well, Lord Shiva, he's somehow touched by Tamogun, and Lord Brahma, he's touched by Rajogun. In fact, they need it to perform their service to Krishna. But what about Vishnu? Is he, as some philosophers think, he is an incarnation of the mode of goodness, the material mode of goodness. Now, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary on this verse, he goes to great pains to explain how, no, this is Shuddha Sattva, Vishuddha Sattva. This is pure goodness. Lord Vishnu is never in touch with material nature. This is one of his great potencies. In this purport today, we read about how God has multifarious energies or multifarious potencies. One of our words you probably don't hear too often, multifarious, so or variegated. So he has innumerable energies, and they act in inconceivable ways and sometimes contradictory ways. But because he has these energies, he can interact with the material mode of goodness without touching it, without being affected in the least. That's the idea that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur makes. Also in the Bhagavat Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami takes up the same issue. And he also, by quoting various scriptures, he shows that Lord Vishnu, and when it's talking about Lord Vishnu in any context having to do with the mode of goodness, it's the mode of pure goodness, Vishuddha Sattva. Don't think it's the ordinary mode of goodness. Now we also heard in the context of the verses leading up to here, to this point, that of the three, Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwar, the living entities can get real benefit by worshipping Lord Vishnu. And there was a verse just after that that said that the devotees who are interested in ultimate liberation, therefore, they are not interested in the ghastly forms of the demigod, Gaura Rupam. And the purport Prabhupada lists some of those forms, Maha Bhairava and Sani and Kali, different forms of Kali. So these are frightening, often these forms of demigods. They're actually demigods. They're subordinate to Krishna. So it says those who are ultimately interested in liberation, they're not interested in worshipping those demigods because they can't give you liberation. Mukti pradata sarvesham Vishnu Even a sankshaya, this line Prabhupada quotes. It's actually from Sridhar Swami, his commentary in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. It says that only Lord Vishnu can give liberation. You might say, well, I thought devotees gave liberation, or gave bhakti, or can't Vishnu give, can't Shiva give liberation? But if they do, and they may, but because Krishna empowers them. That's the idea. Krishna is empowering them, allowing them. Because no, they don't do anything outside of Krishna. Ekali Ishwara Krishna Arasa Britya. Krishna is the Ishwara. He's the one who's controlling everything. So if somebody's getting liberation, Arasa Britya, that means everyone else is his servant. So one of his servants is giving the liberation because only he has the power to do so. Because he's fully in transcendence. And he has ultimate, he has the final word. He's the Supreme Court. What he says, that goes. That's the law. So some of the points in the purport today, the part that I read here, so there was the part about his energies are multifarious. Prabhupada talks about the internal and the external energies. There's an interesting phrase that Prabhupada said here. He said, whereas those who are expanded, he taught the two kinds of living entities. The living entities who are expanded by the internal potency are eternally liberated persons. So the Krishna's personal associates in the spiritual world, they're all part of Krishna's Sarup Shakti. Expanded from his Sarup Shakti, his internal potency, as it's described. Of course, in one sense, there's no difference between Krishna and his energies. But for our understanding, we can say more intimately connected with Krishna. Everyone in the spiritual world, those eternal associates, Yashoda and Nanda and so on, you can't become them. I used to think when I was a new devotee that there were just, because there's unlimited Krishnas, so you have like, you know, Goloka Vrindavan, you know, Brajas here and Brajas there. There's millions and millions of Brajas, and you know, you can just be another Nanda or another Yashoda. But no, there's only one Nanda and Yashoda. They're expanded from Krishna's internal potency. And we become their servants. That's what we aspire for, to become their servants and to serve Krishna in their mood. As we advance in Krishna consciousness, we're supposed to come to the point where we have a natural attraction to serve Krishna in a particular way. And then we purposefully take up meditation on the lotus feet and service to these particular devotees. Actually, there are whole advanced literatures written by our Vaishnavas on how one goes about doing these things, Raga Nuga Bhakti. So in any case, those devotees are part of Krishna's internal potency. They're eternally liberated persons, Nitya Siddha. So then Prabhupada says, whereas those who are expanded in terms of the material energies are eternally conditioned souls. So when I first read this, I thought, well, we're not expanded from the material energy. We're expanded from the marginal energy. So that's not exactly what Prabhupada says. Of course, he says, are expanded in terms of the material energies. So in the sense that we're bound up by the material energies. We're caught up in the material energies. We're jivas, tiny jivas. By the way, there are eternally liberated jivas. Those who are part of Krishna's Shakti Tattva, like Nanda and Yashoda and so on, they're not ordinary jivas. But there are jivas eternally present in the spiritual world also. And there are those who are Nitya Buddha, like us, caught up eternally in the material world. So we're called eternally conditioned soul, Nitya Buddha. So then Prabhupada says, therefore all culture of knowledge, austerity, sacrifice, and activities should be aimed at changing the quality of the influence that is acting upon us. So there's always going to be something acting upon us, some energy is acting upon us. Either the internal energy or the external energy. So Prabhupada gives part of the list of the things that are mentioned in this verse. Knowledge, austerity, sacrifice, activities, that means karma. So jnana, tapa, mukha, that's the first one, isn't it? No, the second one. Yeah, paraveda, the Veda is the first one. The second one is mukha. Mukha means sacrifices. By the way, there's another verse. This verse with all these Vasudevs, there's a verse that mirrors this in the second canto, 15th chapter text. No, fifth chapter, second canto, fifth chapter, I think it's verses 15 and 16, that instead of saying Vasudeva Paraveda, it says Narayana Paraveda, Narayana Paramaka, Narayana. It says almost exactly, the list is very similar, it's not exact, but it's very close. And it also has this line, Narayana Paragati. So it's saying the same thing, but it's mentioning Narayana rather than Vasudeva. So here again, Prabhupada is pointing out the point that I made at the beginning, that the supreme goal, all of these things, Krishna is the supreme goal of life, all of these things are meant for connecting us with Him, coming under His shelter, under the shelter of His energy. So then Prabhupada says, in Bhagavad Gita it is said that those who are Mahatmas, or whose minds have been so broadened as to be engaged in the service of Lord Krishna, are under the influence of the internal potency. And the effect is that such broad-minded living beings are constantly engaged in the service of the Lord without deviation. So this is Mahatmanastu Mam Partha Daivim Pakati Mahashrita Vajanti Ananya Manaso Gyatva Bhutarama Vyam. Now Prabhupada is using this word broad-minded, which is literally what Mahatma means. Atma means mind, among other things. It depends on the context how it's translated. And Maha means great, so broad-minded. I often make the point that the Mahatma can reconcile contradictions, because sometimes there appear to be contradictions in our philosophy even, but it doesn't bother those who are Mahatmas. Their minds, their intelligence can, or their bhakti, can accommodate those things, these apparent contradictions. So Prabhupada says they're broad-minded, they engage in the service of the Lord. I just wanted to read these verses in Bhagavad Gita, because it's so nice how the way they progress. They're in chapter 9. Actually, it begins with, does Prabhupada talk about this here? I think so. Anyway, being bewildered. Mogasha moga karmano. Well, actually, before that, avajananti mamudha manushim tanamashritam. I think everyone knows this verse. Fools deride me when I descend in the human form. They do not know my transcendental nature, my supreme dominion over all that be. Something like that, isn't it? So then it says, those who are bewildered, those who are like that, these mudhas, the word is mudha, of course, avajananti mamudha, those who are mudhas, what is their situation? Those who are bewildered are attracted by demoniac and atheistic views. In that deluded condition, their hopes for liberation, their fruitive activities, and their culture of knowledge are all defeated. But then it says, so then the next verse is, Mahatmanas tumam partha. On the other hand, so on the one hand, you have those who are bewildered and deluded, and on the other hand, you have Mahatmanas tu mam partha daivim prakritimashrita. Those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. And then another great verse, satatam kirtayanto mam yatantas chaturitabhata. Always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before me, these great souls perpetually worship me with devotion. So this is exactly what Srila Prabhupada is doing here. He's paraphrasing what Krishna is saying here in Bhagavad Gita. He says, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says this, but he doesn't quote the verses. I mentioned in my last class, I think, how in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, you'll see the Prabhupada doesn't really quote very much Sanskrit at all, but he presents the verses, or he paraphrases the verses. He presents the meaning of the verses. So that's what he's talking about here. Those who are, because he's talking about how we can be under the material energy or the spiritual energy. So the Mahatmas are under the spiritual energy. Because they're broad-minded, they know that they should engage in the devotional service of Krishna. So then he says, that should be the aim of life. So Vasudeva Paragati, the last line of these verses. That is the verdict of all Vedic literatures. Vasudeva Paraveda. No one should bother himself with fruitive activities or dry speculation about transcendental knowledge. You see how Prabhupada's kind of running through the list. Vasudeva param jnanam. Now he's talking about jnana. Everyone should once engage himself in transcendental loving service of the Lord. No one should worship different demigods. Vasudeva param maka. Because people think maka again is sacrifice. So how do you worship demigods? You offer sacrifice to them. So don't waste your time doing that. Of course, Prabhupada spoke about that in the purport. In this morning's reading after Mangalarti also. The only sacrifice is Harinam Sankirtan. The Sankirtan Yajna. People want to have big sacrifices. They still have these, actually. We used to, at BTG, we don't get it anymore. They used to send us a copy of Hinduism Today. And every once in a while, there would be some article and some big Yajna that was going on with 1,000 priests and going on for so many days. So they still do these things. They still have these big. They call them, they think they're big, of course, they're tiny in comparison to real traditional Vedic sacrifices. In traditional Vedic sacrifices, all the opulence of the kingdom was gathered, accumulated, put together to put on these big sacrifices. When Maharaj Yudhisthira wanted to have a big sacrifice, he sent out his brothers to go bring back wealth. That's why Arjuna is called Dhananjaya, because he's especially good at doing the pick. Especially good at collecting, bringing money back for the big sacrifice. So they were huge sacrifices. Stadiums full of people attending and brahmanas going away with of gold paraphernalia. you know, Prabhupada tells that story about one sacrifice. And the Brahmanas, they were given at the end, the paraphernalia was made of gold. So they're given plates and things. And he says, but they're so detached, they're walking home and they're thinking, I don't want to carry this. So they just leave it aside. Solid gold plate. Imagine how much this gold was worth, what we could buy with it back then, considering the inflation for thousands of years. So this is traditional Vedic sacrifice. So Prabhupada said, don't bother with that. Of course, in Kali Yuga, you can't really do it right anyway. And people don't understand that the purpose is for worshipping Krishna, not for worshipping the demigods. And then he points out the position of the demigods. Now that's what this last section was, in case you didn't quite follow it. Where Prabhupada said, I'll give you an example. He says, in the prison, so you have the prisoners, and then you have the guards in the prison, and then you have like the king who comes and visits the prison. So the king is different from both the guards and the prisoners. We often think, well, the guards are in somewhat better position than prisoners, obviously. They can go home, one thing. But the idea Prabhupada is making here is that there are certain laws and rules within the prison. And even the demigods, who in this analogy, the guards, they're being compared to the demigods. That's the idea here. That there are two classes, you know, there's the prisoners and the guards, and then there's us mortals here, small timers struggling on earth. And then there's the demigods who seem so great. Even the life of a guard might seem great if you're a prisoner. The guards get to go home and be with their family and do so many things. But they spend so much time in the prison, and they're also under the rules. They have to follow certain laws that apply specifically to prison life, even though they're guards. So that's the point that Prabhupada was making with this analogy. The demigods are still stuck there in some way. In the prison of the material world, they're still under its laws. Even Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. What is that line? Yayam sada paribhavagnam abhishtadoham tirthaspadam shivavarin chinutam sharanyam. This is a verse from the 11th canto. It comes just after Krishna Varnam Turisha Krishnam Sangopangasta Parshadam Yagyai Sankirtana Prayer Yajanti Hi Sumedasa. Of course, I hope everyone is familiar with that, what it means. It's about Lord Chaitanya. So just after that, there's this verse, two verses, and Vande Mahapurusha Te Charanarvindam. I worship the lotus feet of the Mahapurusha. So Prabhupada applies these verses to Lord Chaitanya, maybe because they come pretty much right after, Lord. I think right immediately after, almost right after the verse about Lord Chaitanya. So in that verse, it says, Shiva Vrinchi Nutam. It says that both Shiva and Vrinchi, Vrinchi is Lord Brahma. Both Shiva and Lord Brahma, they worship the lotus feet of Vishnu or Krishna, or the Mahapurusha. The Mahapurusha is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, Lord Narayan, Lord Vasudev, or ultimately Lord Krishna. So this verse is so nice, it lays it out. That's why the Bhagavatam, it's about Bhagavat, it's about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's why Jiva Goswami, he bases all his books. I've been reading recently the Bhakti Sandarbha. The Bhakti Sandarbha is the fifth of the six Sandarbhas. So many quotes. Jiva Goswami, it's amazing, it's just amazing. He quote one thing, it seems like he really likes the 11th canto, Krishna's Uddhava Gita. There's a lot of philosophy there in Uddhava Gita. Of course, we went through it recently. It's like an expanded version of the Bhagavad Gita. But Jiva Goswami quotes it a lot. So not only that, but all over, quotes so many verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam. In that book specifically, he begins the first part of Bhakti Sandarbha is to establish that bhakti is the abhidheya. You know, we have sambandha, abhidheya, and prayojana. So he's making so many arguments about how bhakti is the abhidheya. It is the process. It is the process for getting the goal, getting the goal of life, prayojana. And then he covers so many different aspects of bhakti, how different levels of bhakti and different categories of bhakti and so on. And all the way through it, of course, it's all about Krishna. That's also one of the points he makes, that bhakti is for Bhagavan, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Of course, he starts out, the beginning of the Sandarbhas, to establish Krishna's Stu Bhagavan Swayam, Krishna's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then there are verses all over the Bhagavatam that are promoting devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is actually the prerogative, the goal. The idea of goal. Sometimes goal is taken as, a place, destination, place you want to go to. Like you might say, Godhead, back to Godhead, that's the goal. But that's, in one sense, it's a secondary goal for devotees. Our primary goal is to serve Krishna's lotus feet, to attain the service of Krishna. There's nothing higher than that. That's what's being drilled into us in the Bhagavatam. Because we may think, and everybody does think, something else is more important, more valuable than serving Krishna. But actually, service is the highest thing. And of course, we get that by being attached to the Guru. Getting back to this point, what does it say? Guru Mukha Padma Bhakya Kiti Koriya Akya. Shri Guru Charane Rati Ese Uttama Gati. There's that word again, Gati. Shri Guru Charane Rati. Rati means attachment, charane, to the lotus feet of the Guru. Ese, that is Uttama Gati. That's the highest goal. Devotee has this mood. Of course, he knows that ultimately, the devotee knows we want to serve Krishna's lotus feet. But by serving, being attached to the lotus feet of the Guru, that's how you get Krishna's lotus feet. That's how you get the service of Krishna's lotus feet. And of course, you never reject the lotus feet of the Guru. So all glorification of Krishna, indirectly, it's also glorification of the Guru who's situated at his lotus feet. All right, let me stop here. Getting a little late. I always think I'm not going to have anything to say, but somehow Krishna doesn't make me go dumb. Okay, Madan Mohan has a question.
I was wondering if it's the same word in that that's Vasa. Vasa and Vasudeva, when Radharani asked Krishna, where's your Vasa? Mm-hmm. He said, and he took it to mean resident.
Yeah, it's a play on words. Yeah, because Vasa also means dress, what you wear.
So
in Latin, they have vestments. The priest wears vestments. Comes from Vasa.
So the answer that he, because I was speaking, Krishna gives different answers to different people. So since Radharani asked where is Vasa, where is your residence, he says, my residence is in your eyes.
Yeah.
So we have the Varanyam Bhargo, in the first line of Gayatri, and Sridhar Maharaj, Prabhupada's godbrother, he translates it similar to that it's the way that Radharani sees things. He calls it Radha Darshan, that idea of the light that is translated as the vision that Radharani has. So I was just wondering if those two connected, where he lives in the vision, and all devotional services kind of under her protection, under her direction.
So we know Krishna expands as Vasudev. So is that Vasudev has some relation with Vasudeva we're talking about?
What was the first you were saying? I didn't hear the beginning of
what
you said. Chaturvyuha, are you talking about?
Yeah, Chaturvyuha. Shankarshan and so forth.
In a lot of ways, it's hard to understand these names. For example, when we put on Tilak and we say these names, Damodar and so on, so we always think, well, Damodar is Damodar. Yashoda's Damodar. But there's a Vishnu deity named Damodar. But I always think, well, isn't the name reflecting on the person? So maybe Damodar can mean something else. So in different contexts, the words can have different meanings. Just like the word Vasa, it can mean clothes or it can mean abode. So there's a Damodar Vishnu. There's a Vasudev Vishnu. And Krishna is also Vasudev. So they have the same name, but of course they're all Krishna. In one sense, they're all Krishna. But yeah, even their there's the Krishna is the original Vasudeva. He's sometimes described this way. He's Vasudeva. Of course, in another sense, we say, you know, there's always kind of hair splitting, you might say, that Krishna in Vrindavan is not Vasudeva. When he leaves Vrindavan, then he's Vasudeva. There's one place where Prabhupada says that Vasudeva is Krishna without his energies, which is a kind of astounding thing. I've read that. That's in one purport in the Bhagavatam. Prabhupada says that. So I don't know what that means, actually. But so, Vasudeva, there are different forms of Vasudeva. Krishna is unlimited. He's inconceivable. I was just reading in the fifth canto about where Shukadeva Goswami says, even if you had a lifetime of Brahma, you couldn't explain everything there is to say about this material universe. So I was thinking, 311 trillion, giving a class, 311 trillion years old, and you wouldn't get to the end of describing this material universe. And what is this material universe? It's nothing. It's a speck. I remember one devotee used to like to make the point. He said, we think this creation is so amazing. They take so much, there's so much energy here. There's so many forces. Even on this planet, volcanoes and so, you know, so much power. So one devotee used to say, that's as much power as it takes Krishna to blink. That's as much energy Krishna uses up to create these worlds. So Vasudeva, again, the idea is, of course, he's all expansive. He expands everywhere. His abode is everywhere. So he appears in different forms.
Another question. Is Lord Shiva's position eternal, or it's...
Lord
know,
Shiva?
Like Brahma is, you know, after end of creation, Brahma changed, but Lord Shiva, I mean, how is his position?
Who could understand Lord Shiva? Lord Shiva, he has different abodes. He has his place in Kailas in the material world. He has a place just outside in the boundary, basically, between the material and spiritual. Just as you get out past the subtle material energy, Lord Shiva is there. He's present in Krishna's pastimes in some form. Just like Narada Muni, he seems to be everywhere. And so these personalities, it's hard to understand them. Lord Shiva is very difficult to understand what his position is. Now it's said that he's Sadashiva is sometimes said to be the Vishnu form of Lord Shiva. And when Vishnu is consorts with the material energy, then he becomes Shiva. So he's, in a sense, he's Vishnu, but there's a little touch of the material energy, whereas Vishnu is not touched at all. So in that sense, you would think, well, it seems like therefore he would be eternal. Because he's not an ordinary jiva, so it's not like he's some jivas incarnating as Lord Shiva. So his position, it's hard to understand. Even incidentally, in the Gopi Pranadana, who makes this point in his commentary on Tapasandarbha, and he's following Baladeva Vidyabhushana's commentary, says that even the rishis, he talks about how the rishis are seers, and the Vedas exist eternally, and the seers, the rishis, they're like transmitters. They can see the eternal existing Vedas, and then they transmit them to their transmitters. They give them to us. They see them and they present them to us. And so there are certain names. The question comes up, well, there are certain rishis like Gautama and so on. Because if you say that they're eternal, well, Gautam, he comes and goes like an ordinary person, so if they're eternal. So the acharyas explain that actually that's actually like a position. There's a Gautam Rishi, there's always a Gautama Rishi. There's also always a Vyasadeva who comes in every Dwapara Yuga. But it's a different Vyasadeva. So it's a role. And in fact, in our particular Dwapara Yuga, the previous one, that Vyasadeva was Vishnu Tattva, but he's not always Vishnu Tattva. Sometimes he's Jiva Tattva. So it's so complex, all of these things that are going on. This is in reference even to an ordinary, you might say, ordinary rishi. Even their position is very difficult to understand. Imagine you can see the Vedas. Just like we hear about the personified Vedas, Shruti Gana. So it's can see them directly and hear from them directly. What power that takes. But that's a temporary position. They're empowered to do that. speak his Hebrew.
Yeah, well, like you said, he's not a jiva. He's some partial manifestation of Vishnu, some category. And as you said, the abode's somehow not under the jurisdiction of Brahma. He's not subject to the restrictions of Brahma and his creation. So, even though
we have the, you know, it's described in the Bhagavatam how he's created, Lord Shiva comes out from the forehead when Brahma gets angry at the Kumaras. But it's not like he is born exactly in that. He's considered superior. Lord Shiva is Brahma. Because Brahma is Jiva Tattva. And Shiva's in his own category. He exists in that category. And of course, related to Shiva is Durga. What is her position also? She's hard to understand. The goddess, you know, there's goddess worship. So what is her position? In the Bhagavatam, she sometimes comes off as a little just sort of ordinary, you might say. It's like she curses King Chitraketu. But you think, well, Durga, she's in charge of the whole material energy. How can she get bewildered? Is she in charge or is Lord Shiva in charge? Because he's in charge of her. How does it work exactly? Who knows all of these things, you know? They're beyond our... We're not Mahatmas yet. We have to be Mahatmas. Then we can understand a little better these things. And of course, ultimately, you can't understand. And the devotees, they don't even want to. You know, there's philosophers, they broadly fall, even Vaishnava philosophers, they fall broadly into two groups. Those who are interested in vichar, and those who are interested in rasa. So vichar is more like the mudbites. They're really into intricately analyzing philosophy. Whereas the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, their path is more rasa. We're more interested in, ultimately, in loving Krishna. Like Prabhupada would say sometimes, just learn how to love Krishna. So all of these hair splitting, I mean, we do it, of course, as part of our practice of devotional service, to try to understand, just try to understand, Prabhupada would say so many times. But you get to the point, just like Mother Yashoda came to the point where she just said, I can't figure this. When Krishna, when she saw the universe in Krishna's mouth, so finally she just threw up her hands and just said, Hare Krishna, more or less, that's what she said. He gave up speculating and just let me love Krishna. Let me give Krishna my breast milk. So rasa, well, so ultimately that's what we're interested in. We do it, we're doing all this discussion ultimately because we want to that, we want that. We want to serve Krishna. We want to experience that. All right, let's stop here.